No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and I'm your host, Jess Root. It's been a few weeks. I will admit that I have not been in town. I had with the holidays, even though it was in the throes of the end of the football season and playoff mix. Family did prevail. I did need to take my family up to visit my in-laws in southern Utah, which meant poor internet, which means this show would not have gone well. But welcome back to Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm glad to be on the air. We have plenty of talk to talk about as the Arizona Cardinals, their season disappointingly came to a close. We'll have Seth Cox on the line here in a bit as we are going to talk about the sad part of the season. The last few games, the playoff loss, what went wrong. But here's where we're at. Since the last time that we were on the air, Arizona had well, before last we last came on talking about the Seattle game, following the Rams game, and then we had two more games left in the regular season. The Seattle Seahawks, a game that the Cardinals lost in really show much at all. Brand Lindley had his first start. It was a disappointing, very, very bad performance. Then the Cardinals closed the season with a tough loss to the San Francisco 49ers, and so they were unable to close the door and unable to clinch the NFC West. Seattle takes the division and the number one seed. Cardinals finish the season 11-5, and as the five seed, traveled to Carolina, traveled to Charlotte to play the Carolina Panthers, who won their final four games of the season to get into the playoffs and win the NFC South, 7-8-1 team hosting a playoff game. There was a little bit of disappointment from some as to how that happened. But then the Cardinals this last weekend went to Carolina and unfortunately were able to do very little. They had a 1-point halftime lead at 14-13, despite only 65 yards of total offense. Carolina did all they could to try and give the Cardinals that game, do everything they possibly could to lose that game. But unfortunately, the Arizona Cardinals defense and the Arizona Cardinals offense were unable to really help with anything. The defense was gashed by the running game. The offense produced a record low for the postseason, 78 yards of total offense. And their season came to a close on Saturday, 27-16, a loss. A bitter loss, a very disappointing end of the season for the Cardinals, especially the way they started the season. It was a season of what if. We could play that game for a long time. Bruce Arians won't have anything to do with it, but that's something that we can do as fans. What if? So we're going to start the show. We've got the review things. There's lots of things to talk about for the offseason. We're not going to talk offseason Cardinals things quite yet. We are not moving on from this. So this is our final show in which we will look back at the 2014 season. We'll look back at the good, the bad, the disappointments, the awards. What went wrong down the stretch? What was the key loss, whether it's a game or an injury that really came down to? And kind of look at that playoff loss as well. And then after the show, we will then move on looking forward to 2015, to the offseason, and everything else. So we start a new year at Revenge of the Birds Radio. It is 2015. And, well, let's bring on Seth. I should have clicked the button better. Hey, how are you doing tonight, Seth? How's it going?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing great. Would like to remind all of our listeners that our show is brought to you by audible.com, where you can find the internet's leading and largest audio content online, when you can get a free audiobook download. Check it out today. Great service. A great way to start off the year with new reading content that you actually don't have to read. You get to listen to it. At audibletrial.com/revengeofthebirds, you'll get yourself a free trial and a free audiobook download. Check it out today. audibletrial.com/revengeofthebirds. So Seth, how does it feel? Season's over. I mean, this is, I know you get really into the draft. I kind of let you lead the way with that. And I just kind of ride your coattails, because I don't watch enough college football tape to know who's good and who's not. I pretty much stick to Arizona State football. So I know this is an exciting time for you, is it not, despite the disappointment of the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting, but it's also disappointing. I think a lost season is kind of the best way to describe it. You look at how the season started, and then, you know, kind of the ride of Carson Palmer, Drew Stanton, and then how it ended with the thud of Ryan Lindley. And just, I think that disappoints you, because this season felt special. I think it felt special after the initial Palmer injury, and everything kind of just continued to go okay after the initial injury. And he came back and, you know, continued to light it up. I mean, he had his worst game, obviously, the game he got injured. But it just all then kind of started to fall apart. And I think reality set in then that this season was not going to be as special as we'd hope, I think. And that just leads to kind of disappointment in the fact that it's just a lost season. It's one of those things that you hope it's something that you can build on. But as you and I, you know, have discussed together before, you never know how many chances like this you're going to get in a career. And for a guy like Carson Palmer, or, you know, even Larry Fitzgerald, maybe this was their last best ride.
In fact, let me jump this topic right to the top of the list, since you kind of brought it up. And we know the Cardinals lost. They had a terrible game. It was an almost unwatchable game, to be honest, for outside of the Cardinals faithful and the Carolina faithful. To the casual football fan, that game had to be unwatchable. And yes, the numbers show that people were tuned into ESPN something fierce. That the numbers say that. However, in terms of football, it wasn't good football at all. It was a terrible football game to watch. It was very disappointing. The Cardinals couldn't do anything right on really in any phase of the game, and the Panthers tried to give the way again. Were this any other team but the Cardinals in their current state, Carolina would have lost that game. I'm completely convinced of that. But after the game was over, I can't remember if it was after the game or towards the end of the game, when the game was very much in hand, I could have put the tweet out there, and I got a little bit of feedback from a few followers. Is this the way the season ended? It was just so much despair and sadness, in my mind, it felt like there's a dark cloud hanging over the Cardinals, even though they had the losses, because there's so much uncertainty this offseason. To have the season start the way it is and then to collapse, end up in the playoffs and lose miserably, there was a bad taste in the mouth. 2013 wasn't quite like that. Yes, there was the disappointment of not having made the playoffs. However, going into the offseason, it was very optimistic. And I know you in particular tried to temper that optimism, because there were a lot of questions. But overall, there was a feeling of this is going to be a special year. Then it started special and it fell apart. And the question is, as a fan, which would you prefer? Which is the better situation? Which do you feel better about? Do you feel better about the season where you overachieve and just miss the playoffs and then you're left with full that optimism, as opposed to this really special start to the season and then a collapse and then an abysmal ending. Even though they make the playoffs, they get stomped and they look ugly doing it. And then you have, on top of that, so much uncertainty in the offseason. I know there is optimism among the team and the coaching staff because of the players returning, but there is a lot of uncertainty moving forward. As a fan, which do you prefer? Would you prefer the playoff embarrassment and kind of collapse? Or would you have rather seen the overachieving looking forward to say, oh, next year's going to be special?
I think you kind of can just combine the two at this point, because I think they overachieved. I mean, people are going to get mad at me, which is normal, but people are going to get mad at me for saying this, but they were not very good after Palmer went down. I mean, they had a couple, they win two games after Palmer went down, or was it three?
They were 9-1. Yeah, they won two more games because the Palmer game, Stanton came in and won the game, and then they won two more after that. Yes.
Yeah, so we'll just call it 2.5 then. But, you know, they went, you know, basically either 3-4 or, two and four, however you want to look at it, after Palmer went down. They weren't a good team. Like, everything that could go wrong in that St. Louis game, or after that St. Louis game, went wrong. Palmer gets injured, so now all of a sudden you're leaning on Drew Stanton. All of a sudden the defense just starts to whittle into nothingness, and all of a sudden this top five defense is now a top 15, maybe top 20 defense. And then, you know, they get into the meat of their schedule, and outside of a win against what ended up being an overrated Chiefs team, and a win over what ended up being a probably properly rated St. Louis Rams team, I mean, they weren't really even competitive. And I think that's what hurt, is that you saw the, okay, this is building towards something, and then you saw that, man, this is going to have to wait till next year now type thing all at once. So then, they made the playoffs, but I picked them to win, but I texted a couple buddies. I don't remember if you were in on this text, but I think I gave them 10% of a chance to win that game. I still picked them because I wanted to have the hope. It's enjoyable to have the hope, but Ryan Lindley was their quarterback in a playoff game on the road in the rain. Like, there could be no worse circumstances than everything I just said right there for a Ryan Lindley, for a playoff game. And so I think I was reserved to the fact that it was over once Stanton went down, and it just became apparent that he wasn't going to be able to get healthy in time. So the feelings are kind of mixed. It's disappointing in that it ended so badly. But I think you have to be cautiously optimistic that if they can retain some guys and some guys can keep their noses clean and they continue to add talent in the draft, that they can take another step next year and maybe, just maybe, be back in the driver's seat again. Because, like you said to open the show, we can say what if. And what if Carson Palmer doesn't get hurt? I feel like the one game that could have been different was probably the San Francisco game and the playoff game, obviously, but in the regular season, the San Francisco game. So, I mean, you're still talking, maybe they're just getting ready to go up to, who would they play, Seattle this weekend. And at least you're still in the playoffs and you have a shot. I think just with Ryan Lindley as your quarterback, and that's not that against Ryan, but just with Ryan Lindley as your quarterback, there was really no shot.
And for me, I'll admit, my position that I have, having grown up a Cardinals fan and now covering the team, one, as credentialed media, and two, running a fantastic fan site with a community of Cardinals fans that, that just impressed me day after day. That game disappointed. I don't think there's ever been a football game that the Cardinals have lost that has affected me as much as it did. It sucked all life. I had a heart, and I had to write a couple of things afterward. It just took everything out of me that I could possibly do, and I wanted to do nothing. There was nothing I wanted to do, and it's because I was so disappointed. Yes, the end of the season I understood, but the way they came out defensively for me was just tragic. Because this has been a defensive team all year, and the defense collapsed. And then I thought, oh, we had a great week of practice. Bruce Arians talks about the best padded practice he's ever been in. I was like, okay, they're going to play inspired. The return of Larry Foote's going to do something. And I think they're just going to do just enough offensively. It wasn't enough. And it really sucked the life out of me. And that's when I posed the question, because I couldn't tell which one I preferred. I know for the team, it was very important that they make the playoffs. That's an important step for an organization, for a core of players, for a coaching staff, because that coaching staff can now say, hey, we made the postseason. And you can use that to talk to your players so the players buy. And I get that. It was crucially important for the Cardinals to make the postseason. And to have it end, no matter how they made the postseason with all those losses. And so for the team, was better. As a fan, I don't know. Because you're left with such a foul taste. It's just, you're bitter. 2013, you had kind of a chance, but the division was too good. It was just too good. The Niners and Seattle were too good. Then 2014, you have the 49ers fall apart, and the Seattle with the slow start. The Cardinals led the division for 15 weeks. The first 15 weeks of the season, first place. And then it was taken from it, and it just fell apart. Disaster, disaster, disaster. So as a fan, I don't like it, because it started out, it's such a special type of year, the way the defense was playing, the big plays they were getting. You felt like with Carson Palmer healthy, coming into the postseason and playing some of the best ball that he's played in several years, this was a Super Bowl contending team. And we wasted that opportunity on Ryan Lindley. We wasted this team on Ryan Lindley. And I love Ryan as a guy, and Admiral what he did, and I have nothing against him, but when you end up with Ryan Lindley starting, these are opportunities that you might never get, because we don't know what's going to happen next year. We don't know if Carson Palmer is going to come back healthy. Yes, they've got all these players coming back, but the coach situation in San Francisco might be better. They've got talent. They might bounce back. Seattle's still going to be good. Heck, if St. Louis gets a quarter, we don't know. And so you can't just lose these opportunities. We've seen it with the Suns a few times over the course of the last 20 years. It's disappointing. And I don't know if personally I preferred this year to last year, because we saw a team collapse just under the weight of injuries, and it just fell apart. So it's really disappointing for me. Let's talk a little bit about the game itself. I don't want to do too much, because obviously the Cardinals didn't really play well in any phase of the game. But
I was going to say, do we have to talk about that?
Let's talk about, was there anything else the Cardinals should have done? Is there anything that Bruce Arians could have or should have done? I guess the biggest question is, I mean, when you look at the stats, the stats were just horrific. I mean, they gave up 188 yards on the ground. Jonathan Stewart Jonathan Stewart, 123. The Cardinals only ran the ball 15 times for a whole 27 yards. They only had, what was even worse is the fact that they only had 47 offensive plays. 47! It was that bad. And the fact that they, at 65 yards total offense, they were winning in the game. At halftime, you knew it was going to come falling apart, but there was at least a lot of, okay, they're playing so terribly, They can turn around. They can do something, and something happened to win the game. And then they even got the turnover there down in the red zone. And then next throw, it's been picked off. And it's really, it was a bummer for Lindley, who had a chance, who probably blew any chance that he had of playing it again in the NFL, because he had an optimistic performance in San Francisco. But then he just, you know, soiled himself again on the field in Carolina. Had he done respectably, I think he gets a look somewhere. And I think the only chance that he has going forward is if the Cardinals are in a situation where they need a number three. That's the kind of the case where they brought Dennis Dixon in. He becomes an emergency guy if you end up needing a fourth quarterback somewhere. And that's disappointing, because knowing Ryan Lindley, the person and the dedication he has, because to be honest, he's shown a lot to coaching staffs. His rookie year, the reason why he got the start, because of how well he did in practice, the progress that he made, the ability to know the offense, to be able to be coached and work hard. And that's why they kept him last year. He's great in the classroom. He knows the offense. He knows the reads. I understand why they went with him, because he was going to be able to manage the game the best, but he just couldn't perform. And so that's he kind of blew that shot. The question came up, of course, is should the Cardinals have put Logan Thomas out there? I'm going to pose that question to you. Should the Cardinals, and would you have, in that fourth quarter when it was all lost, put Logan Thomas out there?
Well, I think, and I said this on Twitter the other day, so I kind of spoiled it, but I think you have to look at the San Francisco game. And that was where Bruce Arians made his mistake, in my mind. And I know people are going to disagree with me, but whatever. I think in a game that meant so little, and I know they had that opportunity if the Rams beat the Seahawks in Seattle, blah, blah, blah. That wasn't going to happen. But so I would have put Logan out there in the San Francisco game. Now, the fact that he didn't, I don't think you could have played Logan, at least started him in the Carolina game. I think he did the right thing. And at that point, you just kind of, you know, one of the things I've noticed, and I went back and I looked through it and I didn't notice any, but I might've missed them, so who knows, was that Arians never pulls a quarterback for playing poorly. He lets his guys work through it, like on the field. So, you know, it's just one of those things. And I think in the end, it was the right call to just leave Lindley in there. I think you could have picked, you know, put Logan in the fourth quarter, and who knows what would happen. But I mean, at that point, what would have been the point, really, outside of not making us watch Ryan Lindley throw more passes? So I think the mistake was more made not playing him in the San Francisco game to see who gave you a better chance in Carolina versus not playing him in Carolina, if that makes sense.
I get what you're saying. Personally, I am very okay at the comments that, and I tend to side on the football people. I understand why they didn't put Thomas in. I understand why they didn't play him in San Francisco. This isn't a guy who was expected to start this year. This isn't a guy who's expected to play next year. He's not a Derek Carr. He's not a Teddy Bridgewater. He's not even a Johnny Manziel. There's talent there. But he hadn't been playing quarterback for very long, and he's in a new offense, a pretty complex offense is that. And the fact that he wasn't in practice, I mean, you can look at it kind of in the nicer side or not so nice side, but when you get pulled from the job after one day of practice, that means he stunk. He was bad in practice. And particularly in an offense where Bruce Arians is very very heavy on understanding your protections and at least where to get the ball. And he continued to praise Lindley and praise Lindley and say he didn't do a bad job. He threw the ball poorly. He didn't necessarily make poor decisions, which is what Arians wants from his quarterback. He wants him to make plays. But if you are making the right reads and protections and protecting yourself and the ball and making the throws to the right people, he lives with that, especially in this type of situation. Thomas wasn't even doing that. He was putting the ball wherever instead of going through progression. He was just bad. And I wrote about this, that it's Ryan Lindley. It's not Logan Thomas's time, that he's not ready, and that's perfectly okay. Because you don't want to make him look like Ryan Lindley his rookie year. The fact, and Lindley, I had hoped that, and I kind of got burned by this, and I said just a few shows ago, in fact, the last time we were on the air, I said, the 2014 Ryan Lindley is not the 2012. Yes, he was. He was exactly the same player. The Cardinals didn't need Thomas's growing pains, and it's kind of a balance, because normally when you get a top-rated quarterback, that you have your franchise, young franchise quarterback, you're usually a bad team. And so when you're a young team and a bad team trying to learn how to win, you put the young guy out there. And Arians has said this before. Arians has said it. You don't learn anything sitting on the bench. And it's true. You don't. You go through growing pains on the field. Carson Palmer said the same thing. When he sat the bench that first year, what he learned was about being a football player, being a professional, about how to practice. But he didn't learn anything about playing football or making reads, or that you don't only get on live reps. And when the bullets are live on the field, as they say. But when you have a team that's not learning to win, it's trying to win, and they want to win now, you don't want your quarterback going through growing pains. And then I'm okay with that. I'm okay with Lindley starting in San Francisco. I'm perfectly okay with Thomas not being on the field. A project that you view as a future, protect him as long as you can. Because if we get a glimpse of a bad quarterback, it ruins it for the fans. Matt Leinart, for example, he played and he had some flashes. Ryan Lindley never had a flash. We've seen a lot of young quarterbacks. They don't flash that first year and we give up on them. And that's it. That's all that needs to happen.
Yeah, and I think I was going to mention, but you were on a good roll. So I think it's fair that you and a lot of people were very much into the, hey, Ryan Lindley can't be as bad as he was.
but he was.
And I think that was fair, because you have this idea that Bruce Arians is a very good coach, so he's going to be able to put Ryan Lindley in a situation where he can succeed. But I think what everybody forgot was Ryan Lindley, or Bruce Arians, puts all the quarterbacks in the same position. That's why, Drew Stanton was basically a 50% passer this year. That's why Carson Palmer was terrible for, seven
half
games?
A season, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's always said this. He doesn't baby anybody. And he really doesn't. So why, so he was going to ask Ryan Lindley to do the same things he asked Carson Palmer and Drew Stanton to do. So that was my reasoning for not thinking he was going to, because, I mean, as much as you and I love to talk about the running game and doing this and that, it's still Bruce Arians. He still wants to throw the ball around the field a ton. And that's what he did. And so in the end, he was more comfortable with Lindley throwing the ball. I understand his point of not wanting to tarnish any progress Logan has made this year. So, this is going to sound really bad. And I don't really mean it to sound this way, but I feel like after the Stanton injury, and then after the Seattle game and seeing Logan and Thomas Logan in practice, where he knew he had to get some live bullets out of him, and then watching him, And then seeing that he was apparently abhorrent, he just kind of waved the white flag on the season. Said, you know what, we'll go with Lindley. We'll let him take his, we'll take whatever he can give us, and maybe it's good enough. And again, we talked about, or maybe we didn't talk about this, but San Francisco, he was good enough to win the game. You know, 17 points from your third string quarterback, that should be good enough to win a game.
Yes.
The defense had just fallen so far by that point that there was just no recovery. And then in Carolina, he just, you know, completely reverted back to, which call him Wiz and Hunt Lindley at this point. So we don't, you know, not Bruce Arians at all. So he just reverted back to Wiz Lindley, and it was just, you know, it was ugly. And so it almost seemed like when he reversed his decision on Logan Thomas, that he was kind of reserved in the fact that, all right, the season's over, because I don't want to shock Logan Thomas by putting him out there and just watching him completely self-combust. And then not only did we, you know, kind of waste a great season 2014 because of injuries, but then I, you know, basically
ruined the project for my franchise.
Yeah, before, and this is me speculating, and this is just my kind of read on what happened, but that was just a thought I had, that it just seemed like he reserved himself to, we're going to go with Ryan, and God help us.
So was it just a pipe dream that we had? Because everyone on the site, everyone who I asked for predictions, fun picked the Cardinals. And I'll be honest, I believed the Cardinals could win this game just because of the makeup of the type of team. Was that just a pipe dream? Did the Cardinals really ever have a chance? I thought so. I thought so because that defense is supposed to be good. And with a good defensive performance and a decent showing on special teams, the Cardinals could win that game even with Ryan Lindley. In spite of Ryan, they could have won that game, but they were bad on offense. They had terrible punting, and they were abhorrent on defense too, with the exception of a couple of plays here and there, which makes, it just makes the entire thing just kind of fall apart. Did we just expect too much? Did we get caught up at a homer moment where we thought that the Cardinals actually had a chance when the truth is they really didn't?
Well, I went back and looked, and then I kind of referenced my grades with Pro Football Focus grades. You know, a lot of people get on Pro Football Focus. A lot of people, you know, get upset about it, but I think they're a good reference. I don't think they're like the be all end all, but I think they're a good reference of like how guys play and things like that. So I went back and looked because I was interested in Dayon Buchanan's, kind of grades by the end. And when you go back and look and you see kind of how bad Larry Foote was, and you see how bad the mentor Carson combination was at the inside linebacker position, you see that Dale Buchanan way down in snaps, and his play was, outside of the Washington game where they graded him really bad, his play was the worst of his season the last basically 5 weeks. And he hit that rookie wall. But not only that, he was just, it looked like he was physically beat up. Because you're asking a guy that, you know, 215 pounds, maybe, to play inside linebacker basically all season, and it just took its toll. And I think,
and he had a banged up knee at the end of the year too, so his mobility was hampered to begin with. He was sore, he was hurt.
Yeah, and so that's what I think it ended up being, is you had your defensive line was still making the same plays, but there was just nobody there that could clean it up anymore. I mean, Larry Foote was hobbling around. Kevin Minter couldn't stay on the field. You know, like we just talked about with Buchanan, he was banged up. Your safeties, Tony Jefferson kind of hit a wall. Rashad Johnson continued to miss tackles. And don't come at Rashad Johnson on the internet. Tough guys, okay? you know, Alex Okafor really hit a wall. And it just kind of all came to a head at once. And all of a sudden, this defense that was flying around, now nobody was cleaning up the mess anymore. And that's what this defense did, you know, for the first basically, 12 weeks of the season, was they cleaned up the mess. And then they went into Atlanta and kind of got exposed a little bit. And, you know, they recovered against Kansas City and St. Louis, but then it just really, I think Atlanta kind of showed not the NFL, but the fans that this team had some warts and they all
duct tape and chicken wire. That it was really duct tape and chicken wire and the storm came, it was too much.
Yep. And so I think that's what happened in Carolina, is that get a stop and then offense would go three and out, and then, you know, and the offense would punt and it'd go 5 yards, and all of a sudden now Carolina's got a short field even though they should have to be going 80 yards. So it just, you know, it was just it's one of those perfect storms of bad, and really it just hit at the wrong time for the Cardinals, and it unfortunately hit everything bad that could happen. We thought happened at the beginning of the year, but we couldn't be more wrong because it all happened at the end of the year.
Well, and then I talked about how early in the season, how this was a lot like the 2012 team, only a lot like the 2012. And people said, oh, quit saying that. That's how the Cardinals were playing. That's how they were winning games in 2012. Only then when Kevin Cobb went down, it just kind of fell apart. The Cardinals were lucky this time, instead of having only one okay-ish quarterback in 2012. They had a good quarterback and then an okay-ish quarterback apart after that. And it looked like the end of the season, I'll tell you, it looked just like 2012, because a strong defensive team suddenly wasn't good defensively. I guess the numbers ended up being, I think they finished as the 24th best defense yardage-wise. Now points, they still were pretty solid. Points, they ended up being really good overall, but their top five run defense fell apart. They gave up ungodly amounts of yards down the stretch. And that's the kind of the next question. What happened to the defense? You kind of brought something up, is that the players that they're counting on, Tony Jefferson and Deion Buchanan, were wore down. Kevin Minter didn't really make an impact. Larry Foote wore down the stretch. Alex Okafor wore down the stretch. Matt Shaughnessy brought back up kind of a boost, but his impact was limited after he got back. Tyrann Mathieu got banged up, and the truth is, that's something to talk about more in the offseason. He didn't have that great a year, one, because he was recovered from injury, and then he got banged up again at the end with a broken thumb. But he played a position where he was so impactful because of the play of Gerard Power. So he never played slot corner except for, you know, part of one game. And that's kind of interesting to kind of look at moving forward, is that. And I always kind of reserve judgment, take a step back, whether I believe in this, how the defense quit on the team in 2012 because of the offensive woes. But it almost looks like that. It almost looked like, because they had the belief they could win the Super Bowl, they could win, they could beat anyone. But the second Drew Stanton went down, and almost the second that Carson Palmer went down, it's like the defense lost all hope. And so they stopped playing as well. And that's how you can see in the running game, because you can typically see with run defenses, yes, there's scheme involved, but if you want to stop the run, that's a want to. That's an effort type of thing. There is scheme involved. There's skill involved. But if you want to stop the run, you do it because you want to stop the run. It's a mentality. And it's almost like they quit in their mind. Not necessarily they weren't quitting on the field, but there was the mental saying, we can't do it. And they fell apart.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard to, like I said, from the film, it just looked like physically guys couldn't do it anymore. We talked about it earlier in the year. Larry Foote was in a lot of places to make plays and just couldn't make them. And I think towards the end, he knew where he was supposed to go, and then he just couldn't get there anymore. And that was kind of, you'd see every, like, I think it was, he had two plays, I want to say, against Carolina, where he was in the backfield, made a play. But then you saw about 10 plays in a row where he was trying to get there, and physically he couldn't get there. Same thing with Buchanan. I think he relied so much early on his athleticism that all of a sudden he didn't have that, and now he doesn't have the instincts of a guy that's played inside linebacker before. So it was just kind of a giant mess at the end, and it was unfortunate to watch because I think the guys on the defensive line were still doing their part. And then you get a lot of guys that were missing tackles and making poor effort at tackles. I think that the secondary, if you wanted to like point at somebody and say you could, I don't want to say question their effort, but maybe question their desire, would be the secondary, where you saw guys maybe not put their, nose into the ball carrier quite as ferociously as you did earlier in the season. So yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. I think it's frustrating and disappointing, and it maybe was kind of predictable in that idea that, God, we've worked our butt off all year, and now we're gonna put this whole season on Ryan Lindley. And again, this isn't like us trying to, or me. I mean, this isn't me trying to bash Ryan Lindley, but the guy's just not an NFL quarterback, and he's had, what is it now, 10 games, 9 starts, 10 starts to show that, and he's never done it. I mean, he's got 3 touchdown
And
passes.
there maybe a flash, maybe a flash against San Francisco, but nothing else flashed. I mean, other than a couple of throws that weren't even complete passes, there were a couple of throws you're like, yeah, but there was no game performance where you're really optimistic about his future, which you have to see in a young quarterback.
Yeah, so it's just one of those things that you hate to do it because, like you said, they were playing so well at the beginning of the year, but it could be just kind of human nature at the end.
Let's pose this question. This is the what if. Carson Palmer, we know that went down. Go down. How much different is this? I think for certain, Stanton wins that football game in Carolina. I'm almost certain because he is that he could do more. And while I was worried about him on the road playing at Carolina, that particular team, I would have comfortable with winning. I think they probably win San Francisco. But I don't think the result is any different because that Seattle game ended up being the one that they really needed, and they did end the game at home. And I don't think it would have made much of a difference at that point, based on the way Seattle played that game. If it had, how much different do you think it would have been if Stanton had been healthy the games?
I think you can even put Palmer in there, and I think the Atlanta game, I don't know if there's any difference, just because while it would have been a shootout, the defense was just getting eaten alive that game, and the Falcons really, kind of dialed it down in the end. So I don't know if the Cardinals, even with a healthy Palmer, win that game. The Seattle game with Stanton, I mean, after what they did in Seattle, I'm not sure there's any difference. I will say I think it would have been closer if Palmer played, but just how good Seattle was that night in Arizona, I don't know if there's any difference really, no matter who starts at quarterback that night. That's one of those, like, unless it's Aaron Rodgers type games, you know, prime Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, that you have no hope. Because that was one of the better performances of the season from anybody that I watched. I think we both agree San Francisco would have been different with healthy Stanton or Palmer. And I think we both agree that Carolina probably would have been different with a healthy Stanton or Palmer. The question then is, I mean, you're still in the same spot. I don't think you can give them a win against Atlanta just because of how bad the defense was that day. And I don't know if you can give them a win against Seattle because of how good Seattle was that day. So that's one of those, you know, all of a sudden now, while you feel more comfortable with Palmer in Seattle, or, you know, maybe slightly more comfortable than Lindley in Seattle with a Stanton, I don't know if there's any difference to the end of the season rather than just the date that it ended.
Good point. Now let's stop being so that this has been a real depressing show. Sorry, listen, it's such a depressing show. Let's look back. Now let's reflect on this season. It was, for much of the season, a real special season. So let's talk about the end. Let's look back. The MVPs, the surprises, the disappointments. If you're looking on the offensive side of the ball, obviously Carson Palmer ended up being the most valuable player, and you're talking about value, but he missed the last, you know, he only started six games. So his impact was limited. If you had to pick an offensive player that was the MVP, who would you give that to?
I think on offense, outside of Palmer, the only other option is Belvedere. I think you can make a case for Fitzgerald just because of the numbers when Fitzgerald wasn't on the field those two games. But I really think it is either Palmer, and if you don't give it to Palmer because of the lack of games played, it has to go to Belvedere.
And that is completely understandable. I would still lean toward giving it to Palmer just because, I mean, who was the best player? It ended up being the best player on the field for the offense all year, ended up being Jared Belvedere, hands down. And that's because Palmer only played six games. Most valuable definitely would be Palmer, but you really can't look at anyone else. And John Brown had some flashes, but he disappeared down the stretch as kind of everyone else on offense did. Fitz was having a solid year through nine games. He would have, at the time, he was on pace for 78 catches for over 1,100 yards. That's a solid season. But he ended up with less, the least amount of catches, the fewest catches and fewest yards since his rookie year, and his fewest number of touchdowns he's ever had in his career. He can't really give that. Floyd was too up and down. Ellington, despite playing only 12 games, ended up leading the team in yards from scrimmage. So, I mean, it's a toss-up between Palmer and Belvedere. And if you're talking best player on the field, that would be Belvedere. What about defensively? If you had to pick your defensive MVP, who would it have to be this year?
I think it's Calais, and that's probably a cop-out, but I think Calais was just so good this year. I thought he was the second best defensive lineman in football this year, outside of J.J. Watt, obviously. So I thought he played well. If you don't want to give it to Calais because that's too obvious, I think you could go Rashad Johnson. I thought he played really well all year. Obviously, the missed tackles are an issue, and they've been an issue his whole career. I went back and watched.
But in fairness, lots of safeties have that problem.
Well, that's what
Paulo has that problem.
Yeah. I went back and looked at his scouting report, and that was one of the issues coming out of college. So, I mean, it's one of those things, like you said, when you're on an island and you have to make a one-on-one tackle to save a touchdown, you're going to get noticed a little more than Kevin Minter or, you know, Larry Foote falling off a guy after a two-yard gain in a pile. So, I think those are the two. I think Crow was good this year, but I don't feel like he had a ton of tough matchups. And then when he did have his tough matchups, he got really beaten up in those two games. I was disappointed in the roller coaster that was Patrick Peterson again this year. And I was disappointed that Tyrann Mathieu can't stay healthy. I hope it's not a long-term concern, but I mean, with smaller guys, you do always have to worry about, you know, frailty or Jonathan Cooper.
For me, Calais is definitely the easy answer. I would lean more towards Cromartie than Johnson, even. And I had picked Rod Powers early in the season. He sort of disappeared in the last half of the season for whatever reason. It's not like he played badly, but he didn't play great. He was playing really, really well the first half of the season. I wanted to give the to Alex Okafor because of the impact that he had. Only his play down the stretch really diminished for whatever reason, whether it was because teams were suddenly running the ball with success, which made him much less effective. Obviously Calais Campbell was the best player on the field all the time. Patrick Peterson had a rough season. Crow was good. Rashad had, I mean, honestly, he had as good a season as you're going to have from a safety tackle wise, the plays that he made. And he is really valuable in that locker room and on the field because of his veteran savvy at this point in his career. But yeah, I mean, down the stretch, the missed tackles were they were glaring. They were glaringly bad. And yeah, so I mean, obviously Calais, best player on the field. I wanted to give it to Okafor, but it didn't last. Other than that, I'd have to give it to Cromartie. Let's look at surprises.
Well, go ahead. Sorry, I was counting. So I wanted to make sure I had that number right. I was looking at Okafor because his season really mirrored John Abraham's last year to me. Do you remember like last year we talked a little bit about Abraham?
Six or seven games was nothing.
Yeah. And then he had like a 5-game stretch where he was out of his mind, and then he kind of tapered off again. Okafor really mimicked that. I mean, he had the sack against Seattle, which was kind of pointless at that point when he had a sack, I think. But his sacks came in like a 6-game span. And he didn't do a whole lot after that. I thought that was interesting how he kind of mimicked Abraham and his like kind of up and down. I know he didn't play until week 6, but.
Oh, and the Cardinals pass rush was like that too, because for the first half of the season, nothing. Then it was all of a sudden, hey, for 6 weeks, they're the best pass rushing team in the NFL. Then it was nothing.
Yeah, and so I just thought that was interesting because I had noted it, but then I never went back and counted. Yeah, so all of his sacks came in like a 6-game stretch. I think it was actually like an 8-week stretch, but like 6 of the games over those 8 weeks, he had all of his sacks. So,
well, let's look at the biggest surprise. Biggest surprises of the season for you, what would they be?
So the biggest surprise on offense for me was, I think, Bobby Massey's development into a really, and this will sound bad, but it's not, like really average to above average right tackle in the NFL. I think just taking that next step after basically being benched all last year was important. I thought that was a good surprise. And I think John Brown was a good surprise, but I mean, we know how much Arians loves the deep ball, and there's a difference in like Michael Floyd deep balls and John Brown deep balls, where Floyd is more of a 50-50 guy and Brown's a guy that's going to catch it and, you know, keep going. So I thought that was nice. On the other side, on defense, the surprise was how well early in the season Daniel Buchanan played inside linebacker, and then how well in the middle and kind of later in the season Alex Okafor rushed the passer. I think those were both pleasant surprises. And I was surprised at how well Crow held up for, you know, I think it was 13 out of the 16 games. You know, he had two or three bad games, but I thought he was impressive.
For me, offensively, there were two surprises. And one, it might kind of be an odd surprise, and the biggest one was how really good Carson Palmer was. based on the rest of his career. He's always been a turnover guy. He's always been, I mean, kind of gunslinger, and he really bought into the offense and the ability to take care of the football. So that was what he did over the 6-game stretch that he had was super surprising. We expected good things. We expected, 4,000, 5,000-yard season. But it was surprisingly more effective and more efficient than what was expected. I was surprised down the stretch at Kerwin Williams, a guy that I'd never heard of. They brought in Michael Bush, then a son they cut him, and then, oh, wait, Kerwin Williams rushes for 100 yards? It doesn't make sense. So he was a big surprise for me. Other than that, offensively, there wasn't much in the way of surprises. There were definitely more disappointments, which we're going to talk about in a minute. Defensively, I was most surprised with Alex Okafor, because he, for a guy that, I mean, they raved about him in the offseason when the pads weren't on. But then when they got the pads on, Bruce Arians talked about his need to have a better motor and then more pass rush moves. And then he got, then he was dinged up again. So it was surprising surprising how impactful he ended up being. For the first half of the season, I guess I was surprised at how well Jerod Powers played as well. The biggest one for me was how important Larry Foote ended up being. And I thought I kind of that was going to be an underrated move, but he ended up being much more impactful. And I mean, he wore down the stretch. That surprised me, because that was really, I mean, he showed it. The inside of the linebacker core wasn't good, but he sure did his darndest to do okay with that group, which was rather pretty disappointing. Any other surprises that come to mind now?
I can see the foot thing, but maybe it's just the pessimist in me, but I kept waiting for the balloon to pop, and it did. So I wasn't, I think that's why I wasn't super surprised by him. What I was surprised about was how well, and I text you this, the first or second week of camp, and said that a buddy of mine had a scout tell him that the Cardinals linebackers were the worst in the league, the linebacker. Yes. And you just look at what Todd Bowles did with that group, because I mean the front three are really talented. Even without Darnell, they were still really talented. And then back four or five, however he was lining it up, were really talented. But that three or four linebackers that he had to run out there, I mean, Alex Okafor might be the only one that sees significant playing time in a Cardinal uniform next year.
Sam Acho was really disappointing. I mean, in terms of impact, he's a good skill guy. I mean, he's got some skill. He's okay in coverage. Yeah. He's pretty good in the run game, but in terms of an impact player, he's not.
Yeah. And Matt Shaughnessy will be here, and he's a run defender. That's what he is. I mean, he's nothing sexy about him, but it's just Todd Bowles did was, I don't want to say surprising, but I think just the level that he was able to get them at for, 12 or 13 weeks, that was surprising, because they were legitimately a top four or five defense in the NFL.
That's a really good point, because we expect the defense to be good, so you kind of take it for granted, but we're talking surprises on the field, and we forget the fact that it was a unit. That defensive unit was really good for most of the season. I guess another surprise that you could say would be, despite the issues they had on the interior line, just how really effective they were at pass blocking this year, considering where they had come from over the past couple of years. The pass blocking was terrible. This year, the pass blocking was really quite adequate, at least adequate. And that's something we haven't had really ever. So it was at least adequate and actually pretty solid for most of the year.
Yeah, and I think that's why Arians was so hesitant to make a switch, because he saw how above average, I guess, the offensive line was playing in pass protection, and that made it where he just said, you know what, I'm just going to deal with this run situation by letting it go because of how good we're playing with, you know, in the past. So I think that's honestly why he never pulled the trigger, because, you know, it is tough to insert somebody in to a lineup and have the same kind of continuity in the calls and all that. So it made some sense, I guess, but yeah, I think that's another good, like, surprise you can use.
Talk disappointments. I mean, I'm not going to talk about the injuries as too disappointing, because obviously that was disappointing. The whole season. Yeah, yes. But there were definitely disappointments on both sides of the ball. I mean, you can on the offensive side of the ball, you can point to a couple of things. Andre Ellington was disappointing. And I know there were injuries to that, but he had a disappointing year based on the impact and what he was expected to do. Jonathan Cooper, definitely very disappointing season. Michael Floyd, disappointing season. John Carlson, horrifically disappointing year on the offensive side of the ball. And which makes you wonder, oh my gosh, this season was, there were so many disappointments they had on offense, and yet they were as good as adequate as they were for a long time. And then on the defensive side of the ball, from Kevin Minter, what do you do? I mean, what do you do with Kevin Minter? What do we really, do we know what he is yet? Mike Jarecki talked early on the season, like heading into the season, he had that chest issue, that pec issue, that even perhaps could have done surgery in and kind of silenced the entire year. So I wonder how much of that were strength issues, just pain issues, just a lingering injury there in the chest, and whether or not that was part of the reason for his a lack of tackling ability, which we saw especially late in the season. At the same, you could definitely point to Patrick Peterson. He had a disappointing year overall because of the high expectations they had. There were definite disappointments across the board. Heading into the season, the biggest disappointment had to be what happened with John Abraham, because they were kind of like counting on him to be the pass rush he was, and then not only does he not come to camp, he's in rehab, and he comes in, he's out of shape, and he gets a concussion, then he's done for the year. So obviously, I rattled off a number of disappointments, but for you, what were the biggest disappointments on either side of the ball?
I think it starts on offense with John Carlson and how bad he was. I think I saw a lot of people, and I was trying to remember, it was either on Twitter or it was on an article you wrote on Revenge of the Birds, where people were saying this is a guy that's going to get like 700 to 800 yards receiving. And I'm like, whoa. This guy hasn't been good since he left Seattle. Let's just hope he can stay on the field for 16 games. And he stayed on the field for 16 games, and I think a lot of us were like, well, maybe it would have been better if he wasn't on the field, because then Darren Fells would have got on the field faster. Who was also a nice surprise. That's one we both forgot.
Oh, yes, yes.
Kind of development was a nice surprise there.
Chandler Catanzaro, another one.
yeah. So I think Carlson's just lack of impact was really upsetting, because Bruce Arians is Bruce Arians, so he's going to use two tight ends. Like, you can't talk him out of it. He's just going to do it. He could have you and I at tight end, and he's still going to put himself out there for 40 plays a game, because that's just what his offense is. That's what he likes to do. The other disappointment on offense, and, you know, just beat the dead horse that I've already beat to death, but Michael Floyd not taking the next step. I thought this was the year where he kind of would make it, and then it never happened. Like, you saw the first game and you're like, oh, you know, here he comes. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, did they cut him? Like, is he injured? Like, where is he? And then he had the two games where he didn't even have catches. And it's like, it's just like, man, if you're going to take over, if you're going to make it easy to move on from Larry Fitzgerald, you got to show up in every single game.
Yes,
it just didn't happen. defensively, I think you hit the two biggest ones. I mean, Mentor, it's not necessarily his on-field play that bothers me quite as much as the fact that he just doesn't get on the field at all. So he's never in a groove, really. You know, he gets, 18 plays here, 20 plays there, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's on the bench the rest of the game. So it's hard to kind of get a gauge on him. And I think in the secondary, I think Peterson is a disappointment just based on what we have as an expectation. Because if you're going to be the highest paid cornerback in the NFL, I think you should end up playing like at least a top five, maybe seven cornerback.
And he gave up. I can't remember the style. I mean, there was a Philly cornerback that was worse overall on something, but I think he gave up the most touchdowns out of like all cornerbacks and might have been penalized the most.
Yeah, so I mean, at least finishing the top 10 is like in terms of play to justify that contract, because that contract's going to come into play soon. I mean, I know it's already on the books, but I mean, if you're talking, you have to be a top 10 corner if you're going to be the highest paid guy in the NFL. I mean, I just think that's flat out that you have to do that. So I think those are the two biggest disappointments on defense. I'm trying to think if anything else disappointed me from like an individual player standpoint. I think we talked about it earlier, just the end of the season, I don't even know how to describe it. Just what happened at the end of the season was disappointing, and how you go from being a top three run defense to where they finished in the teens somewhere.
Yes, late teens, I believe they finished up. Yeah. It was abysmal. Abysmal.
Yeah. So it was one of those things where that's disappointing because it was such a good season, and then, like I said, everything all of a sudden just came crashing down at once.
Who would be the biggest, like, if you had to pick, who were the best couple of offseason pickups that they were? And for me, you know, you talk about Crow, you talk about Foot. It might have been probably maybe the best offseason pickup they had was Chandler Catanzaro, because he was, aside for a couple of games, a little bit shaky. That's how kickers go. Kickers will have a shaky moment. But he was money all year, and he was good in every phase of the game. There, nobody missed Jay Feely, which was, I mean, people were ready to get rid of Jay Feely. But look at the other teams that had gone with rookie kickers. They regretted that within about 3 or 4 weeks, almost every single one of those teams. Chandler Catanzaro might have been the most impactful pickup they had on the season. Carlson was an utter disappointment. Larson was a good pickup, even though he didn't have the good season, but it was very valuable to have because of Cooper's injury. He wasn't ready to go. Larry Foote obviously was good. Antonio Cromartie was crucial, but you might say that Catanzaro was the best move they made in the offseason.
Yeah, I think outside of Belgier, you can definitely...
Oh, jeez.
Argument.
I forgot. What the heck? Well, how could I forget the big guy?
Well, no, I know. We just are all so giddy about it. So I think, Catanzaro was a huge improvement, because not just because of his play in the field goal game, but in the kicking game and being able to, you know, kind of really set field position and make offenses have to go 80 yards or, you know, more if they decided to run the ball out. I think that was important. I guess Drew Butler could have gone in the disappointment section too, because that was bad.
In that game, yes, which was interesting if you look at his season, because he had a very...
average. Sort of, yeah, it was very, probably below average, but he was average all season.
But then you look at the numbers, he had more inside the 20 punts than anyone else in the league. So he's got that stat to hang on it for his agent to go somewhere. I think he's decent enough. He should get a job somewhere, but he was inconsistent is what you had, because he had the punts blocked. I don't know what happened, Carolina, whether it was the rain, the weather, or just the moment or something.
Yeah, that was the moment. But yeah, I think Catanzaro was definitely one of the more important pickups of the offseason. And I think if you can do something with, God, we forgot about Ted Ginn too in that disappointment. I didn't want to talk about Ted Ginn anymore. I think if you can do something similar with your kick returner, punt returner next year, you just add another, you kind of layer dimensions of, you know, improvement. And when you're 11-5 outside of health, you know, there's not a ton you can improve on, but I think when you look at, you know, the punting game and get Zastville back, and then you can find a kick returner, punt returner, I think that's what you start to look at as, like, because we've seen what time can do working off the scrap heap or undrafted free agents, you know, Tony Jefferson, Chandler Catanzaro, guys that have made impacts on this team that were not draft picks. And I think that gives you hope that the offseason will, you know, be fruitful again in those same situations.
And that should give it us about a wrap. That's a good place to stop when it comes to the show, because now we can put a wrap, put a bow, and if you want to put it in the evidence box and hide it in the locker, we're done with the 2014 season. It's officially over. We might play a little what if a little down the line, but starting next week, and I don't think it's going to be an every week podcast now with the off season. We'll probably take a little bit of time off, then have a free agent. But there's definitely some stuff to talk about. So we are now moving forward. We have wrapped up 2014. We're putting that in the archives. And we're going to look forward to this offseason. And next week, we'll start talking about the big issues coming up. That's Seth Cox. This is Jess Root. This has been Revenge of the Birds Radio. We always thank you for listening, those of you who have been listening live. And if you listen via download, of course, you may subscribe on iTunes or on Stitcher Radio. Have a good night, everyone.
Have a good night, guys.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.